Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 20th, 2017. This is episode 1415. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time for a little tech talk, computers and the internet. We talk about smartphones, that's tech for sure, and smart watches. I'm starting to see more and more Apple Watches around. It's interesting. I'm wearing one right now, but that's my job. I kind of like it. It's not a great watch. It turns off, so you don't see the watch face until you turn it back on. But it's kind of good for your fitness and stuff like that. Apple says it's done very well. In fact, they said they doubled, or was it 50%? 50% increase in sales last quarter, which surprises me. We talk about the watch. We could talk about virtual reality and self-driving cars. Anything with a chip in it, any kind of tech. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. The website is techguylabs.com. That's a good place to go if you hear something on the show and you want a link or you want to know more about it, because we put everything I mention up there. Techguylabs.com, including audio and video of the show after we air it live. We record it. There's this amazing technology that allows you to record programs and play them back at your leisure. On demand. I demand to hear it. On demand. Are you ready for the big eclipse tomorrow? You can. I've mentioned this before, and I will say it one more time, and then I won't belabor it because you're hearing it everywhere. Don't look at the sun, right? It's bad for your eyes. You can burn a hole in your retina and like that. For more information about how to view the eclipse and what the eclipse will look like and what time it will be hitting your neck of the woods, you can go to NASA's got a great website for it, Eclipse website called 2017eclipse.nasa.gov, 2017eclipse.nasa.gov. When you get there, it has an interactive eclipse map. You can click on your location. It'll tell you exactly what time, it takes a while. It's like half an hour, 40 minutes, something like that. If you'll see totality, that's only a 70-mile swath, a Miss America sash across the United States that we'll see totality, a complete total eclipse. But the rest of us will see a pretty good chunk of the sun disappear, 70 or 80% of the sun disappear in most of the United States. That's by itself pretty wild. Don't look at it. Don't look at it. Be careful if you bought eclipse viewing glasses on Amazon. They had a recall. What kind of lowlife would make something label it safe for viewing the eclipse that wasn't? And sell it to kids? That's pretty low. You could actually blind yourself. You're more likely, I think, you give yourself a blind spot. But there's no known cure. It's permanent. So don't do it. And be careful if you bought eclipse glasses on Amazon, check your email to see if you got a refund, which would be an indicator that perhaps they are not all they ought to be. If you want to test them, you can hold them up. Don't look at the sun, but hold them up. To a very bright light. You shouldn't see anything unless the light is super, super bright. And then if that works, like it's completely dark except for a little tiny dim light, then you could maybe hold it up to the sun at a distance and kind of peek through it to see if you could see the sun just glancingly. And it should not be bright. It should be a kind of a dim disc. I mean, I don't know. This is a scientific test. It's probably too late to get any, right? Go to your local welding shop and get some welder's glass or something. Did I say it wrong? Sorry, let me get it right. Eclipse 2017, not 2017 Eclipse. I'm sorry, I flipped it around. Eclipse, if you Google NASA and eclipse, you will find it very quickly. Eclipse2017.nasa.gov. Eclipse, let me just type it in, make sure. Yeah, eclipse2017.nasa.gov. I like to put the year first. Maybe it's just me. Well, it is, apparently, because NASA didn't. In dates, I put the year and then the month and the day, because then it sorts out right. So I just in the habit of, you always start with the year. That's just me. So interesting, the FBI is apparently, this is from a website called CyberScoop. Terrible name, legitimate site though. CyberScoop.com. They have a scoop. According to sources, former senior U.S. officials familiar with the matter. CyberScoop says the FBI has been going around talking to private sector companies saying, look, we have intelligence that says Kaspersky Lab is an unacceptable threat to national security. Do not use the Kaspersky antivirus. Now, this is on the heels of it's almost a year ago, I think the Department of Commerce telling U.S. agencies not to use Kaspersky antivirus. And there was always a suspicion that Kaspersky was writing software for the Russian government and worse, working in cahoots with the Russian secret police, the FSB. And apparently, the FBI have more information, enough to get them going around, especially to critical infrastructure companies like power utilities, and saying, hey, you might want to get rid of that Kaspersky. The FBI's goal, according to CyberScoop, is to have U.S. firms push Kaspersky out of their systems as soon as possible or refrain from using them in new products or other efforts, the current and former officials say. This is from CyberScoop. The FBI's counterintelligence section has been giving briefings since the beginning of the year. I wish they'd told us. Just put it in the newspaper, okay? Call me, FBI, so we could tell the world if it's dangerous for these companies, it's dangerous for all of us. They've been giving briefings since the beginning of the year, 8 months, on a priority, need-to-know basis, prioritizing companies in the energy sector, those that use industrial control and supervisory control and data acquisition, or SCADA, systems. In light of successive cyber attacks against the electric grid in Ukraine, all little tiny, little, you know, few-hour attacks, the FBI is focusing on this sector due to the critical infrastructure designation assigned to it by the Department of Homeland Security. So, you know, what's funny is I talk about this, and many of my colleagues, tech journalists, say, oh, but Eugene Kaspersky is such a nice guy. I have never met Eugene Kaspersky, but he seems to be rather liked by the tech press. And I think that that's insulated them a little bit. And they're reluctant to criticize Kaspersky. He's such a nice guy. He couldn't possibly be hand-in-hand with the Russian secret police or part of a Russian attempt to form a cyber attack in the United States. Couldn't possibly. He's too nice a guy. Well, if I were a Russian spy, I'd be a nice guy too. I wouldn't be a mean Boris Bednov type. We are going to take you down. No. I'd be jolly. A jolly little Russian fellow. Ho, ho, ho. Let me buy you a drink. I'm a nice guy. So I just, you know, I'm surprised this hasn't been covered more. The U.S. government and now the FBI intelligence agencies are warning companies not to use Kaspersky. Kaspersky makes a number of products. They just announced it last month, and I said at the time, this is a little weird, a free antivirus. Anybody who wants it, you can use it. It's free. Now, I'm sure people are looking at this thing. Is there anything with this antivirus? Is it doing anything? But there's always the possibility it could be some sort of command and control device and that an update could trigger something. It's just, there's plenty of other choices. and I don't mean to besmirch the reputation, the goodwill of Eugene Kaspersky, the founder of Kaspersky. Many people seem to like him quite a bit. I'm sure he's a nice fella. But why take a chance? If the FBI is going around warning against it, maybe Why take a chance? I'm not a fan of any antivirus, truthfully. I think the, you know, Windows 10 comes with a pretty darn good antivirus. If you're using Windows 10 or even Windows 8, if you're Windows 7, you can download Security Essentials. It's from Microsoft. It works well. Certainly works well enough. And it doesn't give you that false sense of security. Like, I'm safe. I'm going to go anywhere now. You don't want to do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to the phones next. So Jerry Lewis has passed away. That is official. 91 years old. Great book about Lewis called The King of Comedy. Highly recommended. LogMeIn Central subscription includes free endpoint security from Kaspersky. Nice. Well, all I would do is send him a link to this CyberScoop article and say, I guess it's your decision. I don't know. I tell people not to use Norton and McAfee as well, not because those are Russian spies, but just generally causes more problems than they solve. It's a little different in enterprise. We use, and most enterprises do use, malware protection. Usually it's in an, you know, hardware device, as it is in our case. Ours is Sophos because we use Starro gear. Yeah, there's a Patton Oswalt has a very interesting anecdote in his one of his books about he did a staged reading of The Day the Clown Cried. I don't know where they got the script, but somehow they think they got the script, and they did a staged reading, and Lewis shut it down. Yeah, Dvorak always recommended Kaspersky. I have no reason to think it's dangerous, but this, except for this leaked story from the FBI. And I really think the FBI is doing the world a disservice. If they think there's a problem, they need to tell everybody, not just sneakily go around telling people. Yeah, I saw that Dick Gregory passed away as well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. NBC News is confirming that legendary comedian and actor Jerry Lewis passed away at the age of 91. So that's just coming across the wire. Jerry Lewis, dead at 91, creator of the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon, raised many millions of dollars for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, ran that telethon from 68 to 2010. Remember, of course, he and Dean Martin were a team, and then he went off on his own writing and directing movies. And it's probably a day of mourning in France where he was much, much loved. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kim Schaffer is here, the tech
girl.
I'm not going to say it. I started. You know I started, and I don't know. Nowadays, we got to be careful. I'm not going to say lady. I think woman. The tech woman.
I think somebody else with my name might have that.
The tech woman? Wow.
Covered. But
hi, Kim Schaffer.
Good
it's good
morning.
To see you.
Good to see you.
Yes. Wow, you've got your clip shades. Now, those, we think those are okay.
You
but
think they're okay?
Don't you think
I
now?
I saw them laying around. I'm like, oh, look.
Yeah.
Here's a pair of glasses.
They're ISO certified for eclipse viewing. And I could tell you how you might be able to tell. We have very bright lights in your studio.
I cannot see that light above me at all.
You can't.
No.
And there's one light behind you that's even brighter that you should be able just to see a dim disc. Yeah, the red one.
I see that.
So I think that those are safe, tech female.
Awesome. Tech bot.
Tech person.
To go back to yesterday, maybe a tech bot.
Tech bot. You've been botting the phones, answering them. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I see we have some full board calls lined up. Who should we talk to?
Ease into our Sunday.
Yeah, good idea.
You know, nothing too hard. You can spend someone's money. And David in Leavenworth wants a new laptop and wants your recommendation between two that he's looking at.
Good. I like to recommend laptops. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So?
Yeah, I've got to, in the market for a new laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And I've narrowed it down to two manufacturers, Dell and Lenovo.
I love them both. I would say that, you know, Lenovo is my current favorite because I just like the looks of the Lenovos. But the Dells are very good. I've owned many of an XPS from Dell. They also have a great Inspiron line. It's less expensive. And they have even more expensive workstations. Lenovo, I would only get a ThinkPad from Lenovo. I wouldn't get one of the lower-end Lenovos. But the ThinkPad line, still designed in North Carolina and is very good. I would also throw in the mix, and this is a surprise, HP. For a while, they were making kind of junky stuff, but when they split off the PC division, they redoubled their efforts, and I think this year's HPs are superb, very good. Throw in Acer, A-C-E-R, and Asus, and you've pretty much got my five or six, I can't count, best choices. Which models are you looking at? Well, actually, before I even ask you that, what do you do with your laptop?
Right now, I do a lot of video editing.
Oh, great. So you need high end.
Email and browsing the net.
Yeah, everybody needs email and browsing. It's that video editing that's gonna bring the bill up a little higher.
Yeah, I'm looking at somewhere around the budget between, $900 to $1,500.
Yeah, you should be in a good shape there. My suggestion is do not get an i7. You might be tempted to, and in a desktop you might want to, because the i7 is a little bit faster, has more L2 cache, which helps with speed, and has threaded cores, which means it can do twice as many things. But on most laptops, because of heat considerations, the current generation chips, and even probably the generation before that, never get to their full potential. They're heat limited. In fact, I see this all the time when I run software to look at what's going on with my i7, which I bought a Lenovo. Got two Lenovos, the X1 Yoga, which I really like. That's the second generation, and a T470S, which is a little more of a businessy laptop. I really like it, but I shouldn't have gotten the i7. I should have saved my money, put that money towards memory. And because you're doing video editing, you're going to be very careful about the screen. For instance, I wouldn't recommend the T470 that I bought because its screen isn't very accurate. The Dells, the XPSs have more accurate color screens. You're going to look for probably a screen that can do the P3 color gamut. That's the standard in video DCI. And so that's a little harder to find and costs a little bit more. But the good news is you can save a little bit, get a high-end i5, which will be as fast just because of thermal considerations, get more memory and a better screen. And I think you should be able to get it in. It might be a little closer to the high-end of your range.
About support, I know that they've unbundled that. Is there a way to buy support?
Absolutely.
Is it local?
Well, one of the reasons I bought the Lenovo is you can buy a support contract that will give you, it depends on what you want to spend. I think they're very reasonable. I bought the one business day, they come and fix it and then at your place of employee plan. And that's awesome. And the reason I bought that, my friend Cory Doctorow is a very well-known novelist. And he says, I give myself a treat. I buy a new Lenovo every year. He uses Linux on it, but that's fine. It runs Linux or Windows 10. And he says, what I do is I buy the Lenovo and I buy this one-day turnaround on-site support. And he says, the reason I get that is because if this is my work machine, it's probably the same for you. And if I'm down even a day, that's a day I don't write. So he recommends that. And I did it because I thought, even though this isn't a mission-critical computer for me, I like the idea that if something goes wrong with that machine, they come and fix it or replace it within 24 hours, one business day, which is pretty awesome.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So the Lenovos are, for some people an acquired taste. They have a very kind of Death Star look to them. They're very solid. They're carbon fiber, with often metal chassis with a soft-touch plastic that I like a lot. They have a lot of people like that track point, little orange nubby in there. I think they do very good track pads now that they're using the Windows track pads. And in every respect, I think these are great. I've spent a little more money than you wanted to spend on the X1 Yoga because I bought the OLED screen, which does have a full DCI P3 display. And boy, that looks good. It just depends how important color correction is to you.
Yeah, okay. On the second one you bought there from Lenovo, is it like a touch screen?
It's not a touch. The one I got, because I run Linux on it, is not a touch screen. And it's also not a very good quality. I mean, it's fine. The color reproduction is good. And I wouldn't do photography or video editing on it.
Okay.
So look for – but Dell, I think the Dell XPSs have very accurate screens. They're very good. HP's Spectres are very good. I love those. The 360s are very good. They have some really – nice machines. Get the high end in every respect because you're just going to get better quality. Lenovo does offer a variety of discounts. If you look for Lenovo perks on Reddit and other places, you might find a discount code. I was able to find a 33% discount code, which made that ThinkPad quite affordable.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, I appreciate the call. I keep an eye on these things. I buy a lot of laptops. I do not probably recommend Microsoft Surfaces, but they're pretty good. They're pretty good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, the Spectre 360s are really nice. Best Buy is a nice place to shop because of their return policy, but I don't know. Yeah, $1,500. This is a good price. Yeah, that is. I have a Spectre, and I really love it. 15.6 inches, which is nice for video editing. That would be very nice. It's 4K Ultra HD touchscreen. i7, wow, 16 gigs memory. See, I'd rather see you get an i5 and 32 gigs if you can. It's hard to find a lot of memory. That T470, one of the reasons I bought it is it had 24 gigs. I could put 24 gigs of RAM in it. But this is for $1,500, that is a nice price. I think that's an excellent price. And these HPs, oh, look at that. That's a 2-in-1. Yeah, great deal. And you know what? For that price, I know you're not going to be able to get the full speed of the i7, but who cares? Our show today brought to you by the best darn app. Your iPad was made for this app, Texture. It's kind of like Netflix for magazines. Access over 200 of the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere. Not just your iPad. You can do it on your phone, an Android device, your tablet. Texture.com/twit. You ever stop in front of a newsstand? Do they even have newsstands anymore? But it's fun with you. Well, maybe you're at the airport. That's probably the last place you still have newsstands. You go, you see all these magazines, and I guarantee you, you know, there's 4 or 5 magazines with a subject or a topic or a cover that you'd like to look at. I have that problem all the time. There's almost every month there's something, Rolling Stone or The New Yorker or Vanity Fair or National Geographic. There's something I want to read. But the problem is, if I subscribe to all those magazines, it would cost me hundreds of dollars plus. My coffee table would break under the weight of all those magazines. It just adds to the clutter in my life. I was thrilled to discover Texture. One low flat fee, and you get all the magazines, every page that you could want. So there's National Geographic. And by the way, photo magazines look better. Shutterbug, National Geographic, because the images on your iPad or your tablet or your phone, they're higher quality than the printed page. They look beautiful. Plus, you get bonus features you can't get in magazines, like video. They have a curated front page where their editors suggest articles. There's always something to read when you've got Texture on your phone or tablet. And it's great for travel. Access not just your favorite magazine, but the latest, greatest investigative journalism, U.S. politics, domestic, international news. You're never out of the loop. And there's great fiction to read, too. I read The New Yorker on Texture every week. By the way, it's just like the newsstand. You even get the ads. You get everything. You flip through the pages. The cartoons are there. You can zoom in, make it bigger, easier to read. These are all things you can't do with a printed magazine. I love Texture. No wonder Apple called it one of the top apps for the iPad for 2016. Why subscribe to just a couple of magazines when you can have them all on your smartphone, on your tablet, all the time for way less? Texture.com/twit. If you go there right now, 2 weeks free. So you can try it out. You can see what it's like. Texture.com/twit. 2 weeks free. Texture.com/twit. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Love it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask. Leo, thanks, of course, as always, to Michael Cozy, our musical director, for keeping the energy up. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you'd like to talk high tech, Ben and Merced. Hello, Ben. Hey, Ben. Did I pick up the right line? Are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
But I'm Ken, not Ben.
Oh.
Okay.
That's good, Ken. Hi, Ken.
Okay. It's good to talk to you, Leo.
Thanks for calling.
I was What was the name of the photographer that was on there yesterday?
We had Scott Bourne on the new Screensavers. He's a good friend and a wildlife photographer. Brilliant guy. Brilliant guy. Wonderful photographer.
Yeah, it was good to, hear. I'm just point-and-shoot kind of guy. But what I was asking about was I couldn't get any of the glasses around here. The college out there, the university, bought them all up. So.
Yeah, I know. I think if you're looking to if you're planning to see the total eclipse at this point, you're going to have a hard time finding the right equipment, I think.
Well, I researched welding goggles or welding lenses.
Yeah.
And they don't normally carry a 14. That's just, they usually go up to 12.
Yeah, because you can't see anything with a 14. You have to be arc welding or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I used to arc weld. But either way, I bought 2 8s.
Nope.
And I was going to double them up and make a 16, and he said that won't work.
Yep.
Why not?
I don't know. It's not additive. One would think.
Sure did get darker when I put the boat.
I know. I don't want you to hurt yourself. Look, I'm not an expert on this, but that's the experts are. I think maybe they're a little overcautious. We certainly don't want you to injure your eyesight.
Yeah, but 2 8s would equal a 16, and I'll guarantee you it's blackout.
Yeah. Well,
what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it out to the university and ask them and see what they say.
Yeah.
And then see if I can't get a pair out there.
Yeah, I would. And you know what? I would hope that. You know, if people have found a source of get, you know, maybe there's stores or something that bought up a bunch of eclipse glasses and are handing them out. I don't know, schools. I'd be very careful. I'm not sure why it's not additive. I don't know, but I was told, and Scott was clear about that, 2 8s do not a 16 make.
Yeah. Well, he used an 8 and a 6, but they don't make a 6.
Yeah, and I think that that's risky. So, you know, there are places you can go to read up on this pretty much everywhere. If you Google eclipse and eclipse glasses, they'll talk about the kinds of things you can use. Here we go from the Stack Exchange astronomy thread. Here we go. Is stacking welder's glasses, thank you, chat room, a safe way to watch an eclipse? You can find, be careful that you use the right kind of glass. 14 is the darkest. 14 is the only glass that's dark enough for a solar viewing, and no, stacking a pair of 7s or a 10 and a 4 do not have the same protection as a single piece of number 14. According to the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada, if you can't get an SN14 filter, you can combine lower shade numbers to get roughly the same level of eye protection from solar radiation. Oh, however, the image quality may be considerably poor. So it's confusing. Some say it's safe, or some say it's not. I hate to suggest anything that would risk your eyesight. The Royal Astronomical Society of Canada says it is additive, but they're not exactly additive. And if you aim one higher, so what did you get? 2 8s?
I got 2 8s, so I got a 16.
That should probably be okay. But what you may not get a great image, I guess, is the point.
Mm.
So, but again, I'm not an expert.
Layers of glass.
Yeah, I'm not an expert. So, and I'd hate for anybody who listens to this show to do the wrong thing. I guess the trick would be to put them together and. And you can do it today. Not look directly at the sun, but just kind of, you know, glance up and see if it seems like it's fairly dark.
Yeah, I planned on putting them in a box.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and then
there you go.
Bring the whole pot, and then I also have a hat in the box with a. What's the size of a screw that you use for a camera?
Oh yeah, these tripod screws. What do they call them? 4020s or something. There's some funny name for them, and I just don't know what that converts
to. Well, anyway,
to.
I was going to hook the hat through the box
on a tripod.
I'd have the hat on my head, and it'd hold the box in place. And then on top, I'd put my camera.
You're going to look good. Now he did warn you, didn't he? That do not point your camera at the sun because you can burn out the sensor.
Yeah, that's what I. And even on one just quick shot picture, huh?
Well. You know, I've done it with my camera phone. It doesn't seem to have made any difference. So I don't know. That's an interesting question. I trust Scott. He's a good photographer. Certainly what you don't want to do is look through a SLR, through a lens at the sun, because that's going to be worse than even looking at it straight on.
Yeah, it amplifies it.
It'll amplify it. And but if you have a point-and-shoot, for instance, that you're not actually looking through the viewfinder, you're looking at a picture of the picture.
Well, it'd be
couldn't hurt you.
So when I'm looking up there, I can just push the button and click it.
I like it.
The direction I'm looking.
I want to see you in that outfit.
And then I was going to put another. Oh, yeah, it says party pack on it. It used to be a beer.
Now, variety of beers. Now you, of course, you know you're not going to see totality in Merced.
No, it's only 72% here, I believe.
Yeah. According to NASA's website, you can photograph the eclipse with a smartphone. You just don't want to look at the sun directly. But you could look at it through the smartphone's screen because that's going to protect. You won't hurt your eyes.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get a great image.
This is just a cheap Canon point and shoot.
Yeah, you have to zoom it all the way out.
Well, the other thing I was going to do, though, is I might just turn it around backwards. Because the last time we had a partial eclipse around here, all the leaves and everything,
I think that was Scott Bourne, our photographer's suggestion. He says, well, lots of people are going to take pictures of the eclipsing sun, and certainly it's interesting to watch. But the more interesting thing is to watch people's reactions, to watch what the animals and the wildlife do, to see the shadows it casts. There'll probably be a lot of – that's my plan. Take pictures of what's going on while the eclipse is happening. That might be more
interesting. Yeah, make that little half-moon pattern on everything.
Isn't that cool? I love that. Yeah.
I'll probably do that.
Yeah. Good luck and be careful, okay? Don't listen to some guy on the radio.
Yeah.
do your research.
Well, I think I will. Like I said, I was going to go out to the university that's here in Merced.
Ask them.
And ask them about it and ask see if them. You think.
And maybe they'll have a little pair of these specs lying around just to be safe.
Well, I'm sure there got to be extra ones out there.
Yeah. Yeah, oh my gosh.
They're just going to be bored and go, that's not much to look at here.
I've got my pair right here, thanks to our studio manager. And it does say they are safe for direct solar viewing, ISO 12312-2, and all of that. But, you know, there's nothing that keeps people from printing that on there. But I'm assuming that our studio guy isn't going to risk my eyesight and got them from a reliable source. Have fun. It's going to be quite an event. I'm told, you know, and there'll be another one, by the way, 7 or 8 years in the U.S., so don't cry if you miss it. But I am told that something kind of magical and mystical happens in the area of totality where you just get the sun completely going out. There's something primeval about that. And animals get squirrely. And even we humans, even though we know exactly what's going on and the sun will be back in a minute or two, it's still kind of spooky. Spooky. But do please protect your eyes. And I won't reiterate this warning that you've heard for weeks now. Everybody hammering on you. Just be careful, okay? And there are places you can go online. You can find out what's safe and what's not. And some tricks for viewing, if you'd like to. Best places, eclipse2017.nasa.gov. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The totality isn't that interesting unless you have a very, you know, a lot of equipment and you know what you're doing. Even then, more interesting to watch. My, of course, I know about the ThinkWiki, but my favorite place to learn about ThinkPads is Reddit has some really good. This is so awesome. I love this. Little Sony A7 camera. It even comes with a lens. Yeah, and a little camera sensor cover there, so you don't hurt that there. It goes right in there. This little box. That's very sweet. Full frame A7 R2. There you go. Ooh, hysterical. Yes, Lawn Dog. I'm glad you asked. Teespring.com/twit or twit.tv/store. And you too can own the Steve Gibson Security Now coffee mug. A mere $14.99. I love the picture of Steve on it. It's so funny. And on the reverse, of course, it says Twit. Just so that everybody knows where you found your Steve Gibson Security Now mug. All the Twit merch, including This Week in Google, This Week in Tech, and many t-shirts are available at twit.tv/store. He does. He's so funny. He originally vetoed this. He said, this picture, I hate this picture of me. Listen, but Steve, I love it. It's you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. We're talking tech. We're talking eclipse, too. I guess it's astronomy. That's tech, kind of. Eric, Sacramento. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, it's Eric, my friend, the coder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just had a question about Windows PowerShell.
Oh, okay.
It wants me, when I try to enter a file from a regular file into the PowerShell, it says it doesn't want it. It wants a pathway, or it wants a script file or an invertible program.
Right. So PowerShell, for those people not as smart as you, Eric, is Microsoft's kind of replacement for the DOS batch language. It's kind of the batch language on steroids. It's a lot closer to the shell languages from Unix and Linux and so forth. It's not Bash. It's its own thing. Microsoft created it. It's used, widely used by people to automate tasks in Windows. And Windows 10's PowerShell is better, even better than ever. You can have it be your command line and execute PowerShell commands. Are you trying to write a PowerShell script?
Yeah.
So, if you're, how are you loading the file into PowerShell? What do you mean? Are you using the load command? What are you doing?
I'm just copying it and then trying to paste it.
Ah, you're pasting it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're writing a script, generally what we do is we write it in a simple editor. You can use Notepad if you want. Don't use WordPad, but you can use Notepad. Write it there and then save it out as a, I think it's .ps file, PowerShell file. And then you can open it from within PowerShell and that will run it. Or you can edit it there.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I would go, you know, PowerShell is a great language to learn. It's very specific to Windows, but if you know you like Windows and you'd like to learn some programming, I think there's nothing wrong with playing with PowerShell a little bit. Go to Microsoft.com/PowerShell, and they have a lot of information there about PowerShell, including a copy of Visual Studio Code, which is free and is designed for editing your programs, and it's perfect for PowerShell. You can actually write a program in Visual Studio Code and run it right there, which would be a lot easier for you than using the command line to do this.
All right.
Yeah. So that's what I would suggest. Go to Microsoft.com/PowerShell and download, PowerShell for Visual Studio. You can also get more information about Visual Studio there. That's free. Visual Studio Code is free. And that makes it much easier for writing a PowerShell. They call it an integrated scripting environment. Yeah, thank you. What are you writing in PowerShell?
Well, I don't know yet.
Yeah. Are you studying computer science in school, or is this all on your own?
This is all on my own.
Good man. I like that. Do you want to – what kind of stuff would you like to do for a job? You want to work in technology?
No, but I like it as a hobby.
It's a great hobby. You know what? I like you saying that because that just means you're doing it for fun. And you know what? If you're doing it for fun, you'll do a better job. So enjoy it. Have fun. Once you get started with programming, a PowerShell is a perfectly reasonable place to do it. Microsoft offers a lot of tools for free and a lot of great resources. Well, here's another one. Thank you, Mike B. PowerShellGallery.com, which is a lot of other people's soft code. So you can look at how they do things. A lot of programmers, that's how you learn, is you read other people's code. And, of course, there are a lot of books about PowerShell. They're mostly written for grown-ups, I'll be honest with you, Eric. But I think you're smart enough you'd be able to figure it out. So enjoy your foray into PowerShell. Not usually the first language I recommend. You know, if somebody calls and says, what language, you know, should a kid start with? I'd say, you know, Python, If they're on a Mac, I'd say Swift. There are probably languages that are more suitable for learning how to program. But I don't want to discourage. If somebody's interested in something particular like PowerShell, like Eric, that's fine. You know, whatever gets you started. My first programs, as many people in my era, were, of course, written in BASIC. That's, you know, if you had an Apple II or an Atari or a Commodore, you used the BASIC that came with those machines, and you'd write silly little programs, you know, 10, print, quote, hello, end quote, 20, go to 10, and print hello infinitely, things like that. If you really say, I'm enjoying writing these little tidbits, I'd like to kind of have a more rigorous learning experience, code.org. That's the group that sponsors the Hour of Code. If you're an educator or a student, it's a great resource. And a number of people in the chat were mentioning that, of course, code.org. Daryl, Orange County, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have a quick question. I'm a business guy that travels. I use a MacBook Air. And a lot of times when I'm traveling around, I have to stop into a coffee shop or something and use the Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that no one's peeking and sneaking around on my laptop and seeing my content.
Well, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Is
there something I can use, whether it's a service that I log on to or a hardware piece that I plug into a USB? What can I do?
There are a number of things you can do, ranging from the mildly paranoid to the completely terrified. It's reasonable to be somewhat paranoid because when you're on an open Wi-Fi access point, anybody else on that is essentially sharing that network with you. So just as if they went into your house, plugged into your Wi-Fi or your Ethernet, and they'd be there and they could do stuff to you, like snoop around a little bit. They can't get into your computer necessarily unless there's a flaw in your computer, but they can watch packets go by. If they're unencrypted packets, they can snoop into them. That's less of a problem these days. If you use Facebook or Gmail or almost any site nowadays, those are secure sites, HTTPS sites, and they can't snoop into those. They can see where you're going, but they can't see what you're doing. And that's really in response to this kind of threat. Facebook started using HTTPS because it was possible using a program called FireSheep to kind of hijack at a coffee shop somebody's Facebook session and post stuff on their timeline. That scared everybody. Facebook's response was to start using secure browsing. And most sites now do that. So if your email provider is HTTPS, that means the login's secure, the password's secure, and the email's secure. But if you go to sites that aren't secure, then you might want to use something called a VPN. You could either set that up on your computer and subscribe to a service. There are lots of them, like TunnelBear.com, one of our sponsors. But you could also use your own hardware VPN. I've mentioned this before. I use the Tiny Hardware Firewall, which is a bit of hardware. It doesn't modify your computer in any way, but you use it, you surf through it, and it will protect you in a variety of ways. TinyHardwareFirewall.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on. So I ran out of time, but that's the gist of it. I think that's super paranoid if you want to do that. I will sometimes, if I'm at a hotel where there's no password, for instance, Daryl, or I'm at a coffee shop where there's no password, or I think Daryl's gone. I'm talking to the air, but maybe he's still listening. I will fire one of these up. These are a variety of hardware firewalls. The general idea of that is this thing has both Wi-Fi and Ethernet. So if I go to a hotel that offers Ethernet, I'd plug it into there. Or there, that one, the WAN port. And then I'd plug my computer into the LAN port, and the traffic would be going through a firewall. This is a router, but it would also be going up to a VPN and down again if I chose. You don't have to, but you get basic protection with a router. You get more protection with a VPN, a virtual private network, which is encrypting it. And this even offers Tor, so you get complete anonymization as well if you want to turn that on. Each step of those, though, slows things down. So sometimes people don't use these because it slows it down. I bring with me this, you know, a portable battery, because this does need power. That will power this. Or you can use USB and plug it into your computer. But once it's booted up, this is a little router, plus it will route you through a VPN. These are inexpensive, $40, $50. Tiny Hardware Firewall. .com. I have an even smaller one in my briefcase. These are the big ones sometimes I carry with me. But if you know, I always have this in my briefcase, and I'll show you. This is even simpler. It's roughly the same protection, but it's just a USB key. You see, it doesn't have any Ethernet or ports or USB ports. You plug this into your computer. It's got a little web browser, a little web server in it, so you browse to its address, and then you join it to the Starbucks Wi-Fi, and then you surf through it. So the whole thing is powered by your computer. It's just coming off your computer, and you can put this on your keychain. I mean, it's light, and again, this is one of the, I think they call this the Napoleon, I can't remember, but this is one of the tiny hardware firewalls. You're putting store in there. I don't know why. Just go to twit.tv/store. Here, I'll show you how to do it. I show you. Look at my website. You go to twit.tv/store. Oh, your store is plural. Maybe that's it. Store is plural. But make it easy on yourself. You could go to teespring.com/twit. That would take you to that one campaign page, or twit.tv/store would take you to the whole store. And that full URL is teespring.com/stores/twit. But I don't know where you got the URL you're using, because that's neither of the URLs that I suggest. So when you make up your own URLs, I make no guarantee they will work. So I keep this handy for demo purposes.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will begin at 6 minutes past the hour. From Premier Network.
And aren't we excited? TinyHardwareFirewall.com. It varies. You can buy the device for, I think, $90 and get a year's firewall subscription. So this is created by one firewall company, a company I trust, Wi-Fi Consulting, out of Washington, D.C., and they have their own hotspot VPN, I think it's called. So yeah, when you buy the hardware, they've changed the model. It used to be you'd buy the hardware to get a free subscription for a year. I think they unbundled it. And I don't know, I haven't really looked, if you can use another VPN. I just use this one. I use the built-in one. So buy it. Let's see here. Oh, see, they're selling it for $5. But you pay the $91.25 for a year. Oh, that's July, so I guess it's over. $35, $41, and this is the one I just showed you, and that's $30, the Napoleon. And then what happens is it routes you through. Actually, they've changed the way they do this now, which is really interesting. Now every person has their own OpenVPN server. Which is really interesting. So you're using. You have to read up on it, but they recently changed this.
Um,
Anyway, tinyhardwarefirewall.com. I feel like they've changed this. Oh, that's right. They're now using blackholecloud.com. And it's using WireGuard. Okay. Which is apparently faster than OpenVPN. But remember, you have to trust these guys. I mean, we Hotspot Shield, who I recommended for a long time, turned out they weren't. They were injecting ads and stuff. So, but I've been using this tiny hardware firewall for years without any problems. I really like this Napoleon. I think it's so funny. That's kind of a neat application for it. You don't have to plug it into your computer. You can just plug it into the wall. So you get Tor VPN if you want. You know, you turn those on. And, of course, it's a router. So you get the kind of fundamental firewall protection of a router, whether you use the Tor or the VPN. Well, hey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, traffic jams on the way to the total solar eclipse. It's all here. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can call collect. If you go to NASA's website for the eclipse, eclipse2017.nasa.gov, they now have an eclipse traffic map. Because if you're trying to go almost anywhere in that 70-mile-wide swath across the United States from Oregon to Georgia, almost anywhere that you might want to see the eclipse, traffic is terrible. Everybody wants to see the total solar eclipse. So probably a good idea, if you're thinking of going somewhere, to look at this website and get traffic updates. It's kind of fun. It's kind of a national thing going on. It's going to be a great national holiday tomorrow. it depends where you are. It'd be around 10:15 on the West Coast and 1:15 on the East Coast in the afternoon. The sun will disappear. We'll go out. There's a Facebook page for one of the Denver TV channels that's showing videos of the traffic, the eclipse traffic. Heading to Wyoming for the eclipse. This is what traffic looks like on I-25 near me. This is from Channel 7 in Denver. That's not too bad. It's not moving super fast, but it's moving. Of course, it's 24 hours ahead of the eclipse. Somebody said, if you're not there now, you're probably not going to get there. Well, you might want to leave soon. Let's just put it that way. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's kind of fun. It's kind of a great national event, isn't it? Clarence, Chesapeake, VA. Hello, Clarence. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, thank you for taking my call. I got a comment for the kids going out to the grandparents' workshop. They had glasses for brazing, for oxygen acetylene,
mm-hmm.
arc welding.
Right.
The arc welding is the one that's super dark. And if you grab the wrong pair and you look up, you know how when somebody flashes a camera,
ow,
and you get this little flash in your eye, this,
yeah,
little white? Well, if you look up and you see that sun for just a second, close your eyes, look away, and if you see that white halo, you got the wrong glasses.
Yeah, maybe glasses. Too late.
Well,
yeah.
You know, it's like the flash from a camera.
We've warned people so many times, and it's been, ad nauseum on every television station and radio station, and yet I know, and it's very sad, that tomorrow there will be people, yeah, who will damage their sight, many of them children. Because the message is, not everybody's hearing the message, and they're just going to, it's inevitable. When the sun starts to go out, you look at it. Don't.
Yeah. Leo, thank you for the comment about switching from Android to Apple. It worked great.
Oh, good.
I got the app for that.
Yeah, Apple's got an app for that. Of course they do. Yeah.
Yeah, and I downloaded the app for my Android, and I sent all the information to my new 7 Plus, and it worked really good.
Oh, I'm glad.
And I wanted to thank you because I was kind of hesitant about And all my apps were there, except some of them, that I downloaded. I was authorized user. I had to go back and re-download from the Apple site, but it was already there. All I had to do is, because different system a little bit. But the apps all transferred over. Everything worked great. Thank you.
A lot of people are afraid of moving either from iOS to Android or the other way around. But really, most of the apps you use, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and the phone apps, all of those really pretty much are the same. It's not as jarring as you might think. And Apple does make this move to iOS app that'll make it a lot easier for you because it just goes through everything on your Android phone. It's on the Android platform, move to iOS, and it tries to find the same apps for iOS and download them. It makes it easy, and all your data gets transferred. Well, I'm glad it worked for you, Clarence. That's great.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great day. And, yeah, you be careful, too, looking at the sun. Everywhere you go, including the NASA site I've been recommending, has information on what to do, how to look at the sun safely, what not to do, and certainly don't look at it with the unaided eye. Don't use sunglasses. Be very careful how you look at the sun. And there's a lot of anecdotal stuff. We had somebody yesterday call and say, cut a X-ray image. And, that may work, but boy, I hate to risk your eyesight. And the damage that the sun can do to your eyesight does not get better generally. You won't know for a few months, but it's permanent. That's not good. 8888-ASK-LEO. Please be careful. We want you to come back with perfect vision. Myrna on the line from Twin Peaks, California. Hi, Myrna.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is going to sound like it is headed out as fake news.
Okay.
But it's not.
Well, let me hear it.
All right. I put you in your notifications for the Facebook website for Leo Laporte, no space. So if you want to follow that, instead of trying to follow my words, it will go easier.
Okay.
I woke up this morning to a message on my computer saying that I had virus on my computer and that I must run the following to get on Facebook.
Oh, dear. You didn't do it, did you?
It was in my notifications on Facebook. Why I believe it.
Did you do it? Okay, what happened?
I got on Facebook after that.
Yeah, you probably also got infected after that.
Why would the notifications be in Facebook after I got on?
It could be benign. What did the notification say?
Let me...
Just because you get a notification doesn't mean it's safe.
But I could not get on Facebook without doing this.
Yeah, what did they want?
I was totally blocked from my own account.
Okay.
And what they said was, initially, they knocked me off.
Yeah.
Then I got the message after it was completed. Malicious software removed. I do insert the comment here that I have NOD 32.
Okay.
Trend Micro found and removed 6 malicious files. Learn about other ways to secure your account. That was my first notice. Then I was able to log in, which I had not been able to do. And every screen had the total Facebook logo, etc., totally recognizable. I mean, it was a perfect Facebook. And then...
Easy to do, by the way. That's not a difficult thing to do. Yeah,
I know it is, but I just made that comment. In my Facebook notifications is the following. You were in read-only until scan completes. We'll notify you when it's done. Followed by another comment. Check complete. 6 malicious files were removed.
Yeah. So the question I'm asking myself now is, does Facebook do this?
That's what I want to know.
That's a legitimate question. And it's frankly, let me just say from now on, before you go on, verify, is this real or not? Because this, of course, is how a bad guy would also infect your computer by pretending to be Facebook, by putting up a notification, by saying, download this. It's safe. It's, oh, I promise you it's safe, and running a program. So we've got to first figure out if this really came from Facebook or somewhere else. Hang on the line. We're going to talk to you off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'm seeing some chatter that Facebook might actually do this, but
I'm sure. First of all, I will assure you that I know my way around in Facebook land and computer land. And when I say to you, I could not go anywhere in Facebook until I did this, that tells me right there that there was a link to Facebook.
Well, you'd be amazed at what bad guys can do.
Well, the entire transcript of what happened to me is in your Facebook.
Yeah. My Facebook is Leo G. Laporte, so I don't know if you actually sent that to me or some other person named Leo Laporte.
Your picture was there with thousands of followers and references to Twit, et cetera.
Again, for people to do. People have done that to me before, but let me just check and see if I got... Did you say you sent it as a message or you posted it on my
Well,
my
you're
timeline?
In notifications that I tagged you.
Okay. Let me see if I can I can find that.
Tell me what to tag, and then it will go.
Well, you can send me a message. Oh, I see. You tagged it as a post. You made a post yourself.
Yes.
And you tagged me in your post.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, I should be able to see that. Let's see. Leo G. It's facebook.com/LeoGLaporte because somebody else had Leo Laporte. But if it has my picture and it has a lot of followers, it probably is the real one and lets us... Somebody posing at me. Let me just posing as let me see what Leo Laporte is. Yeah, no, that's not.
There's no space between the.
Yeah, it's names. Leo G. All one word. Leo G. Laporte. I don't see a notification from you, but.
What do you want me to put here to tell?
Well, I don't need. That's okay. Let's talk here.
Yeah.
So you were on a web page, a Facebook web page, right?
I was nowhere and got the notice.
Okay,
upon waking up.
That's bad sign number one. Because unless you're on the Facebook page, Facebook isn't going to do that to you. So
okay. So
that's bad sign number one. Any pop-up that you get like that.
Well, I know about pop-ups.
Yeah, but they can look like Facebook. There's nothing.
It didn't at that point.
Okay.
It didn't. At that point.
It didn't. Did it say any? What did it say?
It said. I've forgotten.
I mean, did it say it was from Microsoft? Did it say it was from Nod32?
That's the one part of the whole thing that when I first ran into it, it was such a shock that I didn't copy it.
Yeah, that's why they want to make it dramatic because they want you to act without thinking. I'm looking to see if I see a lot of search results for Facebook says I have malware. But that's
not what it was.
Yeah.
I was completely locked out of Facebook.
Again, not a difficult thing to do. So tell me the sequence. So you saw the pop-up.
Yes.
And then what did you do?
I followed the continues.
And downloaded some software.
When the scan was complete, I received the following notification.
To run the scan, did you download software?
I can't say at this time.
You don't know. You pressed continue and something happened.
Yes. I would have had a conscious awareness of the word run.
Again, it's possible to spoof a lot of this stuff, so it's not always immediately apparent if it's bad or not. I'm thinking it's probably okay, but I'm going to have to do some more research.
That's what I was thinking. It requires some research.
Yeah. Message Leo G. Laporte, and I will get back to you, I promise.
No spaces?
No spaces, all one word.
Leo G. Laporte.
Yep.
It's on its way.
Thank you. And I will get back to you, I promise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've been talking to Myrna off the air. Not completely clear what happened, but she's going to send me some screenshots. That'll help me look at it and diagnose it. So let me reiterate. So this is the call before the break. We took a break so I could talk to her off the air. She woke up and she had a pop-up on her computer. Okay, that's red flag number one. She wasn't on Facebook. She had a pop-up from Facebook saying, or she said initially it wasn't from Facebook. It was just a pop-up saying you have malware on your computer. Run this scan. That's an absolute red flag. To get on your system, to get malware in your system, a bad guy has to do one thing. He has to, well, one of two things. The easiest and most common is get you to run his installer. To have you run an installer that installs malware in your computer. And why is that the most common? Well, if he can trick you into running this program by saying, well, you need to update Flash, or this is Facebook and you need to run this antivirus software, or whatever. If he can trick you into running it, then he doesn't have to worry about Windows saying, hey, you're about to run some software. Are you sure you want to do this? All of this stuff. You just go, I'm doing this on purpose. And you just bypass all the security, including your antivirus, if you have one, and run their software, and they've got you. By the way, the first thing they're going to do is look for your antivirus and disable it. They're going to put roots deep into your system. Could be a variety of things. Could simply be a little program that will tell your system, join this chat server. You don't see any of this. This is all happening without your knowledge. Join this chat server and wait for further instructions. That's the most common. They maybe put a keystroke logger on there. That's a lot more work for a bad guy. Usually they don't do that. They will keep track of everything you type, including logins and passwords. That means he has to go back, you know, and then he'll upload it, and then he has to go back through it and find passwords. Most of the time, that's not what's going to happen. Most commonly, you join a bot, what's called a botnet, without there's no visible sign of this. You're on this botnet, and the bad guy can use you to send spam, to attack other systems. That's very common. I said there were one of two. That's the most common, the easiest. The second one also happens. It requires flaws in your system. And this is why you keep getting every month updates from Microsoft and updates from Adobe and other companies. Anything that goes on the internet needs to be periodically fixed because software is imperfect. It's imperfect as HE double hockey sticks. It's really imperfect. And bad guys spend a lot of time, and they become very ingenious at finding flaws in this software that let them install their software without even asking you. The way you avoid that is by keeping your system up to date. An antivirus won't protect you. The only thing that'll protect you is making sure your system, scrupulously making sure your system is up to date. Whenever there's a patch, apply it. Make sure it comes from real people. So those are the two ways. They have to run some sort of program on your system to infect it. They either get you to do it or they get the system to do it because the system has a flaw. That's it. Now, if they're going to get you to do it, they're going to do it in the most scary way possible because they want to get you, first of all, they want to get you groggy. They want to get you scared, and they want to get you mostly to turn off your thinking cap, take it off, and just do whatever they say. Now, I don't know if Facebook does this or not. It seems like they might. That's the thing I've got to find out. Facebook does offer free malware anti-malware downloads from F-Secure and Trend Micro. They do offer scanning. Apparently, and this is from Facebook.com, the Facebook security team, our goal is to make it easier for people to find and use the right technology. We've worked with F-Secure and Trend Micro to incorporate anti-malware software downloads into our existing abuse detection and prevention systems. Here's how it will work. When we detect the device interacting with Facebook is behaving in a suspicious way, we believe is related to malware. So I guess they do this. When logging in from the infected device, Myrna's computer, you'll see a notification screen about a malware infection. Boy, Facebook should not do this. This, by the way, post is from 3 years ago. I wonder if they're still doing this. Should not do this. This is, I'm sorry, but this is not how a software should behave, along with a recommendation to use F-Secure's malware scanning and cleanup technology or house call from Trend Micro. These programs are remote scanners. House call is anyway. I don't know about, I believe both of them are remote scanners. They don't require installing software in your computer. Each product contains distinct malware signatures, is suited to different kinds of threats. You can choose to skip the malware removal process and decline to download the recommended scanner. If you skip removing the malware, you may be prompted to run again later. Well, I'd like to know if they're still doing this. This is from May 2014. Apparently, they did do that. It still doesn't help me get to the root of the problem for Myrna. So, Myrna, either it's a fake notice and you installed malware, or it's not a fake notice and Facebook thinks you have malware, in which case you may have malware on your system. Either way, at this point, I'm a little worried that you might have something in your system. First of all, make sure you have Nod 32, which is a good antivirus. Make sure it's up to date. Run a thorough scan from a Nod 32. Microsoft also has anti-malware software on your computer. You may not know it, but they do. On all Windows machines, they update this second Tuesday of every month during their patch process. They update their malicious software removal tool. There's no icon for it in the start menu, but the way to find it is by hitting the Windows key and typing MRT and hitting return. MRT, that'll launch the malicious software removal tool. You can do a thorough scan at that point. That is a reliable indicator of whether you've got malware on there. So I would check that. Amma, she says she's going to send me some screenshots, and I will look on the on my Facebook page and see what's going on. Sounds like, Myrna, this was all on the up and up. I'm surprised that Facebook does this. This is not good behavior on Facebook's part. It's not any website's responsibility to do this to you and to make you install software. That's very dangerous, and Microsoft won't do it. Of all people, maybe Microsoft, the operating system manufacturer, would be the legitimate person to do that. They don't do it. I'm surprised if Facebook is doing this, and I'm wondering if Facebook is still doing it. So I'm gonna check, and we'll see. It's an odd thing, but she's going to send me some screenshots and some information, and we'll have to do a little research on it. We'll have to do a little behind the scenes look. Anybody have this experience? Anybody get 8888 Ask Leo if this has happened to you? Have you received a pop-up on your computer? Not when you're on Facebook necessarily, just in general, saying you got to do this. You run the scan, download the software. That sounds dangerous, doesn't it? Doesn't sound right. It does not sound right. And I understand why Facebook might have thought this was a good idea at the time. I can't believe they'd still be doing this. In general, if something pops up on your screen saying install this program, don't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More Tech Guy coming up in just a little bit, but first let me tell you about our sponsor this week, Rocket Mortgage, our sponsor every week. Now, you may not be in the market for buying a home, although I think on Sundays a lot of people are out, they're about, they're looking. Maybe you see a for sale sign, maybe you see an open house, and you stop by. So first it's just like, well, I'd like to see what that house looks like. I've always wondered. My neighbors live there. Let's look in their medicine cabinet. But then you say, this is nice, and they're only asking how much? Wait a minute, honey. We should buy this house. Now, normally what you do then is you'd go back and you'd go to the bank, and a couple of weeks later you'd call the realtor and she'd say, well, I'm sorry, that's sold. But now you don't have to do that. Now you pull out your phone, you go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, and you can get loan approval right there, right then. Rocket Mortgage is from Quicken Loans, the best home lender in the country for new purchases or for refis. In fact, you don't have to take my word on that. If you go to their website, you'll see all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. Number one, 7 years running. So they're great. But they've created this process now that's fully transparent, that's so easy to use, and it's so fast because it's all online. You don't have to go through papers and boxes and find your pay stubs, your bank statement, none of that. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, And within minutes, you will know if you are approved based on your income, your assets, your credit. They analyze all the options. You can pick the term, you can pick the rate, and boom. You show the realtor, we'd like to buy this house. Can you leave what's in the medicine cabinet there? Because I don't think you're allowed to do that. But anyway, it's nothing to do with Rocket Mortgage. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. Get that home loan fast, whether you're buying your first home or your 10th. Rocket Mortgage can do it fast and easy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. I love them. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Easy to use. Maybe you're not buying a home today, but bookmark it for future reference. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Hey, Chris Marquardt. All the way from the Viewfinder Villa.
Yes, I am.
So what do you want to talk about today?
Well, guess what?
The eclipse?
What's the big...
No.
Well, I do not really want to talk about it, but I will talk about it, and I will do it in maybe a slightly different way than expected, because, you know, everyone will be out there.
Yeah.
They will use big lenses.
Yeah.
They will use long
there.
Telephoto
yeah.
lenses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 1,000 millimeter and more lenses, heavy
right.
tripods.
Right.
You will see special eclipse filters to darken down the sun so that it doesn't blow out in the pictures. And people will have their eclipse glasses on if they get some, if they're not sold out. Some might even use like moving trackers to track the sun's motion to follow the sun with their camera. There will be time lapses. A lot of time lapses on the web. The internet will be full of photos and videos of the eclipse. And I mean, even now, if you look around, the internet is full of tips and tricks on how to shoot the eclipse. And of course, that's also full of warnings to not look into the sun. So, of course, I mean, I could use this segment to give everyone like the 1 million and first eclipse photography tutorial. But, you know, there's so much stuff out there. I'm not going to do this. I would like to suggest something completely different.
I like
and
it.
And what I want to suggest requires a little bit of bravery, as it means you won't really get any shots of the eclipse itself.
What?
But instead, you will probably get something better, and you will be able to do that without having to like buy a big lens, get any extra gear, and so on. Because I guess for everyone who decides to do that now, it's probably too late for that anyway. And here's what I suggest. Turn around. Eclipse photos.
But it's behind
me. Eclipse photos will... Exactly. Eclipse photos will be a dime a dozen, you know? I personally don't have any illusions. If I were out there, I bet someone else would probably do better eclipse pictures because they have a bigger lens or a bigger tripod. It's a bit of a gear fight. No, turn around and instead of shooting the eclipse, do some street photography. You have so many things that you usually don't have, like people and their gear, and you will see lots of them, lots of photographers. Just imagine doing a study of telephoto lenses out there. Like, have you ever been able to take a picture of, let's say, 20 telephoto lenses pointing up in the sky? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
That's a great shot, actually.
Yeah.
That's a photo op. Just imagine these kind of shots, or go lower. I mean, think of low perspective where you do like a telephoto shot with people's legs mixed with tripod legs, for example.
Mm.
I mean, that, I think, it could be a great shot. Or everyone will have these shiny eclipse filters on their cameras. You can reflect things off of those. Maybe pictures of people reflecting off of those eclipse filters. Or, I don't know, imagine a shot of 30 people all with eclipse glasses on looking up. I mean, that would be such a beautiful shot. That's what I will recommend. Turn around. Do not try to compete taking the 20 millionth eclipse photo. There will be plenty of good photos out there for sure. But you'll have one thing that I believe will be really worth and that you will look at later on as opposed to the blurry photo of the eclipse that you get. And that is people.
They're always more
reactions.
Interesting. You know what Google's
People's
doing?
Reactions.
They're doing something interesting in conjunction with the University of California at Berkeley. If you want to know more about it, it's the Eclipse Mega Movie. It's eclipsemega.movie. What if you're going to be in the totality, they're asking everybody who's in the totality to sign up, and they're going to make a giant movie with everybody's pictures of the eclipse. The good news is you don't need to take pictures because everybody else is going to do it, and Google is going to make a movie out of it.
There will be plenty of good photos out there, and I know it's probably a great feeling to be able to take a good picture of the eclipse. But the one thing that a lot of people will not have is reactions of people.
Right.
Like, just imagine a photo of a child reacting to that first experience in their life of an eclipse.
Right.
That is priceless. That is amazing. Or of people in general, or the reaction of animals. They are probably all not expecting that. So,
or maybe so put the camera down and experience the eclipse just for yourself. Although
that would be such a different concept.
What a concept! Although I did see an interesting study recently that said people have a deeper, richer experience if they take pictures of something.
True.
They have a connection to it in a way that they don't if they don't take pictures, which surprises me. But I think as a photographer, you probably recognize that you know, those pictures you took in Nepal, for instance, those will always resonate.
Yeah, but I had both of those experiences in the past. When I remember when I was in Canyonlands National Park for the first time in my life, and I was at the top of one of those canyons, and I looked down, and I took it in. I just gave it the time that I needed, and a friend was with me, and he took the camera and started shooting right away, and I think I had probably at least initially the better experience because
interesting.
I just enjoyed it as opposed to trying to I understand that an eclipse is something that is short-lived and it won't be there after that, so you can't just wait. But I believe that the photos that you can get around an eclipse of people and of their reactions in the long run are going to be worth more to you and to the ones that you show those pictures to.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, taking a picture of the eclipse is a technical challenge, and that's the other thing. You have to have the right filters, the right lens, a tripod. You can't just – don't bring your point-and-shoot camera out there and just try to take a picture. You won't get anything of interest, I don't think.
Well, but anyone who wants to do that should have done their homework by now.
I know.
There's nothing I can tell people who wanna just on a whim go out and shoot the eclipse. It's probably too late for that.
Yeah.
So if you find equipment anyway, I mean, everything is sold out. I think eclipse glasses are now a hot item on the black market. So there's a lot going on. And those pictures, especially the ones with people in them, will tell a different story and will have a different value to people.
Let me ask you this. I've seen, in fact, NASA says your camera phone is safe to take pictures of the sun. And don't look at the sun, but you can look at the screen on your phone. But if you have a professional camera, can you just point it and take a picture of the sun, or is that going to hurt the camera?
Well, have you ever had the sun in a photo that you took?
I guess that's, they're okay, right?
I mean, the bright sun in, at noon, of course you can,
yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, the last eclipse I saw, I was on a boat, a cruise ship, and I mentioned this before, and the captain decided to get
Were
were
you
in Australia.
Following the eclipse?
Yeah,
were you moving with the eclipse?
It was an astronomy cruise, and we were on a cruise ship. And we went to Australia. Mm-hmm. This was 5 or 6 years ago to see the eclipse off the coast of Queensland, and we were perfectly content. In fact, I do have pictures of people looking at it, the other way. I have a few pictures of the beginning of the eclipse. Then the captain decided, unaccountably, I want a better view, and he sailed off into the clouds, and we never saw the rest of it. So that. So much for that. Go somewhere nice. Enjoy the weather.
I have an eclipse experience like that. I was in the clouds once, yes.
It's not fun in the clouds. You just get
it
dark.
Went dark and then went bright again.
Mr. Chris Marquardt is at discoverthetopfloor.com. You can find out about his workshops, see some of his amazing photos. He's going to Norway and Tuscany next. I tell you, this guy is a world traveler. Thanks for joining us, Chris. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. I've been doing a little research on the Facebook. It looks like Myrna's pop-up was legit. Facebook does do that, which is odd. They do tell you to run an antivirus scan. My problem with it is it looks very similar to a scam itself. And what is a little surprising is that it locked her out of her Facebook page. But maybe they do that. I'm going to continue to do some research. I think it probably, Myrna, I think it's okay. And it found six vulnerabilities. If you have the screenshot of that, I'd like to see what it claims it found. A lot of times, this is another annoying behavior. I am not, as you probably can tell, high on antivirus software. There's some decent companies out there. But for the most part, they're really interested more in proving their worth than actually protecting you. For instance, a number of these antivirus programs, when you do a scan, will claim to have come up with vulnerabilities that aren't really vulnerabilities. They're tracking cookies or some kind of minor annoyance. They're not actual malware. But that's because it's good marketing. Well, hey, we found some stuff. You know, oh, yeah, you got to keep paying for us. It makes me a little nervous. It makes me a little upset, frankly. I'm not a fan. Joe, Garden Grove, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing okay. Congratulations. You made it to the part of your show where the moron of the day is called, and that's me.
You know, sometimes I'm tempted that we could name names and say, this was the question of the day. But I would never say moron of the day, only because we all struggle with this. One man's, stupidity is another man's moronicity. I don't know what the word is for that. But it's just, we're all struggling with this. We all are morons in some respect or another.
Well, just wait.
okay. Maybe I spoke too soon. Let me hear it. Okay.
Okay, so I haven't backed up my iPhone for about 3 years. Why? Because I keep getting the thing about the iCloud being full, and I'm just too cheap to buy iCloud storage.
Yeah, it kind of bugs me. Apple gives you 5 gigabytes, but you have 32 or 64 gigabytes in your phone. You can't back the whole thing up.
Yeah, so I just never did and figured it's the phone. How hard can this be? You know?
Right.
So
how much, what could possibly be on here that you couldn't afford to lose?
Exactly. Priceless Cabo Wabo Cantina photos, vacations, birth of your child, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Nothing too big.
You just remember it.
Yes. So I was a little stoked. I got a new iMac. And so I'm like, you know what, I'm going to put some music on my phone. So I plugged the phone in the computer. And I'll admit, I've been indulging in some adult beverages.
Ooh.
And so a little thing popped up. And I didn't really read it. It's something about, do you want to back up the phone, the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course I want to back the phone up.
Wouldn't you?
But apparently, yeah, it sounds like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But apparently it said something about back up to the last time it was backed up.
Oh, you restored it. You restored it. Yeah. You didn't back it up. You went the other way. You restored it.
That's what I did, huh?
Oh, boy.
Hmm.
So now your phone looks like it did 3 years ago.
It sure does. It actually saved like about 14 pictures. I had over 800 on it, so there's 14 left. My moron question of the day is, can I revert?
Yeah, probably not, but there is a little ray of hope because normally when you first plug in that phone, the first thing it does is back it up. Now, I'm not sure why. This is not your fault. This is Apple's fault, by the way. This is absolutely Apple not making it clear enough that what was going to happen is you were going to delete the current contents of your phone and replace it with 2014. In fact, why did it even offer to restore your phone? That's not a good behavior.
No.
That's not good behavior. So don't blame yourself. This is not you. In fact, in general, it's always been my philosophy. If you feel stupid using this stuff, it's not your fault. It's their fault for designing it poorly. They did not give you a clear, inebriated or not, they did not give you a clear indication of what they were about to do. And that's not okay. Now, the ray of hope is, In my experience has been the first thing when you connect a phone up to the computer. Had you ever connected it to that computer before? Yes.
I had not.
Well, yes, back in 2014.
No, it was a brand new computer. So, you know, I did the merge from my laptop.
It was a brand new computer, but it brought over that stuff. All right. Yeah. Generally, what iTunes does when you connect an iPhone to it is back it up first. So what you could try doing is plugging in that phone when you and say restore. When you say restore, it should show you a suggested restore point, but it also will get, you can click on that and drop it down, and it'll show you if there are any others. And what you're hoping is that Apple did the right thing. Apple, by the way, given that it's iTunes, they may not have, because that's just the worst software. But what Apple should always do when you first connect a phone to it is back up. Doesn't pop up a sign that says, hold on, we're backing up or anything, because it does it. You can see it'll say backing the phone up every once in a while in the little window at the top of the iTunes, but that's easy to miss. So I'm hoping that it backed it up. That only takes maybe a minute at most. Maybe you plugged it in and you were doing something else, having another beer, whatever. And then you looked at it, and I don't know why it offered to restore. Maybe you clicked on something and it said restore.
I have no idea, to be honest with you. That beautiful 5K Retina screen, I'm like, ooh, that's Yosemite. Oh, what's this little menu over here?
Sometimes it pops up a thing.
Get that out of my way.
It may have done this, and this is another thing Apple shouldn't do. And that annoys me no end. They do it because the record company said, no, you could use the iPhone and iPods as massive piracy devices. So you can't just take an iPod or an iPhone to another computer and copy the data off of it. It will say, this is a new, we've never seen this phone before.
Yeah.
Would you like to erase it? Sorry. Would you like to set it up as a new phone? And that may be you weren't reading carefully and it did say that. That's my suspicion. That's what happened. But this is bad behavior on Apple's part in every respect. It shouldn't be easy to wipe off your data. Now, having said that, if there is no previous backup, the next thing to do would be go on iCloud and see if you can restore from iCloud, because you did have 5 gigabytes. Maybe something's over there.
Yeah, okay.
Right? But having said all that, there is no undo on that restore. And that's why, in my opinion, before Apple does that, they should give you a lot of warnings. Look, this is going to wipe anything that's on the phone off.
Yes.
It's not going to be, we're going to erase everything. This is going to, and they should have told you that. And they should have told you that in such a way that even if you're not paying attention, it should catch your eye and say, whoa, wait a minute, maybe I don't want to do this. The fact they did it so easily is not good behavior. And I know that because I've seen Apple do this, and this is their fault. Don't blame yourself. However, there may not be any hope. These are the two things to look at. Are there any other restores that you could restore from, something more recent? And if there's anything on iCloud that you might be able to restore.
On iCloud. Okay. I'll check those out then for sure.
Yeah. And blame the music industry and Apple because they set this up so that if you take if your friend comes over with his iPod, they don't want him to be able to plug it into your computer and you back up all his music. That's the whole purpose of that. And I bet you're not the only person. Many, many people have been bit by this and accidentally erased their phone. Now, let me tell you, for the future, you don't have to use iCloud. You don't have to even back up connecting to iTunes. Download and install Google Photos. It's a free app that backs up all your photos for free on Google's Photos site.
Oh.
You would never lose a photo again. You take a picture, it backs it up.
Automatically. No storage allotment, though.
No, they have unlimited storage.
Wow.
I know.
I'll put that on the phone after I hang up with
you. Yeah, do that. That will save your photos. If you connect to your Google account with your calendar and your address book, you just add the Google account. When you do add the Google account, and I presume you have one, almost everybody does, they'll show you, well, what do you want to sync? Mail, contacts, calendars. They say all of that stuff. They will save that stuff at Google. So if you lose the phone, you still have your contacts, your address book. You still have your photos. That's most of what you want, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amazon offers something if you're an Amazon Prime member that's very similar. And Apple will do it with iPhotos as well, but it counts against your 5 gigabytes. And so Apple ultimately is going to charge you. And I agree with you. That's not okay. Google gives it to you for free.
Yeah, I'll do that then.
I'm sorry this happened. I hope you can recover.
No, it's okay. It's my
fault. Live and learn. No, it's not your fault. It's their fault. They made it way too easy for you to erase your phone. That should be something you have to jump through a lot of hoops to do. That should not be an easy thing to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time for the tech guy show. Oh, boy, come to the radio, Ma, Paul. The tech guy's on the radio again. We're going to talk about them computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and augmented reality. Paul always liked augmented reality. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you got a pop-up this morning that said you should install something, I can help you. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo, that's the phone number. The website is techguylabs.com. Put everything up there that we talk about on the show. Actually, I don't. James DeRuvo does. He's writing right now as I speak. He's saying, Paw, Ma. He's writing it all down. Puts it all up there. We also put audio and video from the show after the fact. And your comments are welcome there. There's no sign up. There's no charge. It's free. We do ask that you log in with your Twitter or Facebook or Google account when you leave a comment. That way we keep the riffraff out, the spammers. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's get back to the phones. Got a lot of calls today. I want to get as many as I can. Oh, by the way, as we've done the last few days, last few shows, I will continue to record after the show's over for another half hour or so. We like to get some calls in the can. That's what Michael Cosio calls it. He says, calls in the can. Kevin in Palm Desert, California is next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there, Leo. How are you?
I'm fine. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a retail store that I have a touchscreen monitor, and two of them have blacked out on me within a span of 2 months.
Oh, man.
They cost pretty expensive ones, like $900 each.
Yikes. What are you using for? The cash register? Is it a point-of-sale system? Or?
Yeah, point-of-sale system for a cash register.
Yeah. And when you say blacked out, what's happening? It's just there's nothing on the screen at all?
Yeah, in the middle of a transaction, it just blacked out. Nothing shows on the screen.
And I presume the point of sale system comes from a vendor. Does he sell you all the hardware too?
No, they only sold me the software.
You're responsible for setting up the hardware for this.
Correct.
Who makes the touchscreen?
ELO and PosiTouch.
Okay, so these are intended for point of sale systems.
Right.
Yeah. And I presume they're a little more robust than your average touchscreen computer because cashiers are using them, banging on
right.
them. Yeah.
Right.
So a couple of things. When a screen goes out, sometimes it can just be the backlight. And the way to know if that's it is if you can angle it a little bit and see the kind of a ghost, a vestige of what should be there, your menu items and your costs and all that stuff.
Right. I couldn't see anything.
Can't see a thing. It's completely black.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, that sounds like they died. if you see absolutely nothing, it's a couple possibilities. I mean, the good news, it could just be the cable, the connector. So I would, of course, swap a different one out. And see if it's just the connector. What is it? Is it connected to a PC under the counter or?
Yes, and the power source comes separately.
Yeah.
That little black brick, and it has green light on it. So
the brick is sending power to it. That's good news.
Right.
It could be, but, there's so many things that can go wrong. There's no way.
Someone told me it could be capacitors.
Well, No. There was about 4 years ago, there was a batch of bad capacitors and a few computers got these leaky capacitors in them. And ever since, if anything goes wrong and somebody doesn't know what's wrong, they say, and the chat room does this to me every week. Oh, it's you must have a bad cap in there. The problem is none of this is really user repairable. You can't open it up. It could be a lot of things. It could be as simple as a bad cable, data cable or power cable. The brick's getting power, but the brick then has a cable that leads to the screen. That could have gone bad. Maybe the connector where it plugs in could have gotten bent or torqued. Could be that the digitizer itself, the screen itself, has died. Those are complicated because a touchscreen has a LCD screen, and then layered on top of it is a digitizer that senses the touches and sends that back. They're usually one glued unit, but sometimes they're not. I'm not sure with these devices how they're made. It could be a cup of coffee got spilled in it. It could be all sorts of things. Almost certainly, it's not something you can repair unless it's a cable like that. Then you can swap something in or out. But almost certainly, if it's something inside that monitor, that thing is dead. And maybe you can bring it back to the vendor. It sounds like it died within its warranty period. I wonder, though. I bet you these point-of-sale systems get quite a bit of abuse. You know, cashiers are banging on them. Food gets spilled on them or grease or whatever. And I wonder, you know, if the companies that manufacture these, if A, they make them more robust for that tough environment, and B, if they have a full, you know, year or two warranty, or maybe they go, well, I mean, we don't know, anything could happen. We're going to give you 2 months, 3 months. It's not unusual these things die, and especially given the you know, thrashing they're probably getting. And I'm afraid I can't help you any further than that. If it's a cable, then it's easy. Otherwise, you're going to have to bring it back. Get a replacement. Vinny, Tampa, Florida, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Vinny.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Got a question for you. I use a computer daily, but I'm no computer guy. I use it basically for, you know, office applications and Outlook. But my work wants me to start a website, an e-commerce website. And so I've been looking at different platforms like Squarespace and Wix, and I kind of settled on Wix. And then I came across WordPress. And I was just wondering, for somebody who's a novice and doesn't really know what they're doing, what do you recommend, especially if this is something that eventually should be a long-term project?
WordPress, by the way, is a sponsor of some of our podcasts. So I should mention WordPress.com is a sponsor. Just that disclaimer there. Squarespace used to be, so I have some familiarity with both platforms. Is the e-commerce the main thing this site's for, is to sell stuff online?
Correct. Our company has other websites, but we wanted to set up sort of a generic e-commerce website under a different name, and that's strictly what it would be.
I am going to mention a couple of others that are really designed just for commerce. Wix, WordPress, and Squarespace are general website hosting, and you can add e-commerce to them. Of the three, I think probably Squarespace has the best e-commerce platform. It's very sophisticated. But they're e-commerce plus. E-commerce is just a sideline for them. There are a couple of companies that e-commerce is all they do. The first one I would look at is probably the biggest. It's called BigCommerce at BigCommerce.com. And it's similar. It'd be similar to Wix in the sense that it has templates and you can design a site and all that. But they do all the back-end commerce stuff. They're really all about commerce, and a lot of businesses use them for their shopping carts and for their commerce. So that's one of the two biggest names. The other one, their direct competitor, is Shopify. And if what you're doing is commerce, I would actually, in commerce first and foremost, I would start with Shopify or BigCommerce and take a look at them. Both offer free trials. You could, you know, which I would recommend. In fact, I'd recommend doing the free trials on all five: Wix, Squarespace, WordPress, e-commerce, BigCommerce, and Shopify, because you want to make sure it's something you can do easily. This isn't your full-time job. This is something the boss laid on you. And you have other things to do, I presume.
Yes.
So I would try it just to see how hard it's going to be to update it. You want to see how hard, you know, do they have inventory tools? Do they make it easy for you to calculate state sales taxes and all of that stuff? And that's why I think I would kind of favor BigCommerce or Shopify, because that's all they do. That's what they do. You have other websites, you know, that are about more than commerce. You just need the commerce side. I would look at those two. And I think of the two, it's hard to pick. I like them both. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, don't do GoDaddy.
Don't do GoDaddy.
But I think you'd be happy with any of them. WordPress.com is not It's not really a commerce engine on, you know, WordPress.com. Squarespace, I think, did a very good job with their e-commerce. I was very impressed with that, and it's very easy to do, and they don't charge you a lot, and that's another thing you should look at, is how much it cost. Like, do they take a cut of sales or what? See, you keep playing this good music. I'm not going to be able to talk very much. That's Michael Kozier, our musical director, spinning the discs. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Ray LaGrange, Georgia. Hello, Ray. Leo Laporte.
Hello, Mr. Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
What can I do for you?
A quick question about Windows 10.
Yeah.
And I mistakenly clicked on an email I shouldn't have.
Uh-oh.
I thought it was from my daughter, and it wasn't.
Yeah, that's, you know, they often say don't click on emails from strangers. No, no, that's not the problem. It's from the ones you know.
Well, I thought it was from my daughter, and then when I looked further in the email address, I saw that it wasn't from her.
Yep.
But what I'm trying to figure out is the fresh start in Windows 10, under recovery settings.
Yeah.
Okay.
That will wipe out your data. That'll start from scratch.
Okay. I got the data backed up.
Good.
Tell me that everything, that some of the applications would have to be redone, right?
That's right. You're basically, so there's a, in that recovery menu on Windows 10, there's kind of a different levels, but give your PC a fresh start is taking it back to the way it was when it came. So nothing will be on there. Now, they do say there's a button that says keep personal files.
Correct.
But again, I would do what you did, which is back it up first.
Right. Does that clean off anything that I may have gotten from that email, or do you
know? Well, then that's the problem. So let me go through the different settings. There's a reset this PC. Actually, that's the one that will set it back to the very beginning, and that will get rid of all your data, all your applications. The fresh start. Says install a clean copy. I'm looking at the screen now just to make sure I understand what it does. Install a clean copy of the most recent version of Windows and remove apps that weren't installed on that PC. That will probably get rid of any malware. It'll get rid of a lot of malware. Things like browser hijackers, programs running in the background that'll start up. Those will all be uninstalled. You can keep your personal files safely. There are categories of malware that won't get rid of. There's really nasty stuff that can install itself in ways that won't get rid of. What I would suggest is start with the least draconian, you know, the minor upgrade, the fresh start. And if that doesn't work or you see there's weird stuff going on, then do the reset, which will start it from scratch.
Okay, so fresh start would be a lot easier than the reset.
Yes. And you, keeping personal files is safe. Fresh start should be sufficient.
Okay. All right. I mean, I have not seen anything shown up. I got out of the emails as soon as I could.
You're probably all right, because in order for it to infect your system, as I was saying earlier, they've got to get you to run a program. So reading the email usually is okay, especially if your system's up to date.
Okay.
Was there a download attached to the email?
Well, it went straight to it looked like a magazine.
It had a link. Okay.
Yeah.
So the link, so here's what happens. If you haven't been keeping Windows up to date, and you know I say this over and over again, install those critical updates. Anything that goes online, not just Windows, your browsers, Adobe Flash, whatever goes online, you got to keep those scrupulously up to date. And this is one of the reasons why. That email is, in effect, a web page. Most emails are. And a web page can contain, without, you know, you seeing it, without any visibility, a bunch of different hacks. People go out and buy these. They buy them in kits. And they put them on websites, or they can embed them in emails. If it's a link, it might be on the site that's linked in that link. And you go there, and the first thing that happens, you visit the site, it shows you pretty pictures. But in the background, it's probing your system. It's saying, well, is there a vulnerability here? All of those, though, are old, in most cases, patched exploits. So if you keep your system up to date, just looking at the email, even clicking that link is probably okay. It's where it says download and install this, or you need a new copy of Flash, or your Flash is out of date. When it, anytime it tries to get you to run something, that's more dangerous. But you didn't do that.
No,
so
I did not.
I think you're probably okay, especially if you keep your system patched.
Okay. All right. But the fresh starts, least invasive, and the reset is a little bit more invasive.
Yeah.
That's the way it looks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the recovery options they give you are kind of, there's a variety of them for that very reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
But both of them take care of certain types of malware.
Yeah. I think the fresh start's probably the way to go if you don't mind reinstalling your apps. You may not have a problem. I mean, just looking at that email, even just clicking on that link, unless you installed something, it's probably safe. You've been doing your Windows updates and all that?
Yes, sir.
I think you're probably all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, good luck.
Thank you for the information.
My pleasure. I'm glad you called. That's why when we use the word 0 days, you know, that's when it sends a chill up and down the spine of security experts. See, a 0 day is an exploit no one knew about, a flaw in Windows or Flash or Internet Explorer or Edge or Chrome that no one knew about. And it was discovered and exploited in the same day. So you have to imagine that there are all these people out there, some of them pretty skilled, looking for flaws in computers. It's actually quite an economy now because if you find a flaw, you can sell it. You can sell it to a government. Governments will pay, in some cases, millions of dollars for a way to take over somebody's computer because that's a great way to spy on people. You could sell it to the company that made the software. Usually they don't pay as much. But in some cases, they pay quite well, Google or Microsoft or Apple. You also, there's a brisk black market from hackers and bad guys. They'll buy malware too, or exploits as well. So there's a significant amount of money to be made. There's a lot of people, some of them very skilled out there, just banging on stuff, trying to find a flaw. And when they find a flaw and they sell it, if they don't sell it to the company that made the software, they'll sell it to Microsoft, but they sell it to a bad guy. That bad guy can craft an exploit, craft a virus, some malware that takes advantage of that flaw and release it out into the wild before Microsoft or the antivirus companies or anybody even heard of it. That's a 0 day. There is no time difference between the time it's discovered and exploited. No one had a chance to fix it. Those 0 days are the biggest danger because even if you're fully patched, you're not patched for that. That's a new one. Occasionally, even Microsoft will do what they call out-of-band updates, where there's something so nasty that they go, we got to fix this. We got to fix it right away. These 0 days can spread like wildfire, and they can be a real problem. You know, the most recent one is this WannaCry malware, this Trojan horse ransomware program that brought down, I think, Maersk, the shipping company, said they'd lost hundreds of millions of dollars thanks to a WannaCry A variant. That exploit was discovered, one of them was discovered by the NSA years ago, but they never told anybody. So when the hacking group Shadow Brokers released that into the public, immediately bad guys said, whoa, let's see what we can do with this. And they got it out fast enough that they could take advantage of companies who hadn't yet patched their software. That's the biggest worry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, WannaCry was patched. Microsoft patched it a few months before it went out, patched that SMB bug. But the problem is not everybody updates Windows. Had you updated Windows, had Maersk and Merck and these other companies updated their Windows and kept them up to date, they wouldn't have been bit. Everybody loves the sunshine, right? But how long are we going to have it for? That's the question. Bob in Fairfield, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Leo.
Welcome.
My question is about the iPhone, and it probably can't be answered until tomorrow. I was wondering whether the iOS might contain an Eclipse Easter egg.
Ah, wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah, and the reason I'm wondering that is because back in the day I had an Apple Newton, and in fact it did have an Eclipse.
No kidding. Tell me about that.
Yeah. I was... coincidentally, living in Germany back in 1999 when they had a total solar eclipse over there.
Yeah.
And And as a matter of fact, the path of totality, the edge of it passed right over where I was living.
How cool.
Yeah. And so anyway, I went home, I think it was at lunchtime, to experience that. But anyway, it was later in the day, I turned on my Newton, and to my surprise, as it was booting up, there was a little animation of an eclipse taking place.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, you know, that's got to be an Easter egg. And I only remember it doing that just the one time.
I have my Newton here. I'm going to fire it up. This was apparently, if you set the date to October 23rd, 1995, is that when it was?
Well, no. In Germany, it was August the 11th of 1999.
They must have built in all the different eclipses. Now, what I really should do is fire it up and set it to today's date and see if it does the same thing. Wow, wouldn't that be amazing? I'm gonna go find my... I have a Newton right behind me, a couple of Newtons. That would be interesting because, yeah, I'm looking at Newton Easter eggs, and there was one for that 1995 eclipse. But that sounds to me, since yours also happened in 99, it sounds to me they might have built in all the eclipses.
Well, you know, I initially Googled iOS eclipse Easter egg, and nothing turned up.
Well, it's a different group of people, very much so.
Right.
Newton was done under John Sculley and pre the return of Steve Jobs. So, but that would be cool if there were. I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Right, right. I'll have to ask one of my relatives that has an iPhone to keep an eye out for that.
Well, you can be sure if there is one, we'll all be talking about it. My bet is not, because you know, people bang on this stuff. Maybe they wouldn't have found it. I don't know. That's interesting. I will be looking when I turn on my Apple Watch, my Apple TV, my Apple phone, and my Apple Newton tomorrow. I'll be looking. Wouldn't that be funny if you turn it on? That would be so funny if you turn it on August 21st, 2017, like 20 years later, and it's still new about it, and it did a little. So it was on the startup screen. It was the sun getting eclipsed, huh?
Right, right. It was just, of course, the Newton was just had a black and white screen,
right.
So it was just about a quarter size image of a disc, one disc covering an animation of it covering the other disc.
Well, I'm reached back behind me. I've got a couple of Newtons here. They're a little bit dusty. But the nice thing about the Newtons is all you have to, they took AA batteries. All you have to do, and I've booted them before, is put some new batteries in. Hey, Burke, bring me some batteries. Let's see if we can we can fire this guy up and see if it does that. I'll let you know if the Newton does it anyway. I can't tell you till tomorrow what the iPhone is going to do.
Yeah.
Let me look and see. I think they're AAs. Well, there's some in here. Maybe I can just... Maybe these are still good. It needs four AAs in this message pad. This is the message pad 2000. Wow, that's a great Easter egg. I appreciate the trip down memory lane.
Yeah. And you were mentioning on your show yesterday that Google's going to announce a new Android.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow after the eclipse.
After the eclipse.
They're going to do something.
Yeah, that's an Easter egg of sorts. It was a little bit of a surprise to us, and Google announced this on Friday, that, oh, by the way, we're ready. Android O is going to come out now on all the Pixels, and we'll make that announcement. They're doing it at 11:24 Pacific, which is right after the eclipse is completed. You know, not just totality, but the entire thing. I see a little corrosion in the battery compartment. That's okay, right, Burke? Just put them in. What could possibly go wrong?
My recollection is the Newton also has one of those little coin-sized batteries, too, if I'm not mistaken.
It does, and that probably, well, but I can set the date if it doesn't remember the date. Let me just see now. It does have one of those coin-sized batteries, and I can see it, and I have a few of those, too, lying around. We're pretty well equipped for Newton resuscitation here at the studios.
Yeah, I haven't fired mine up in decades.
Well, you know, I was surprised because I thought, well, let's put... Oh, there it is. You hear that sound? You ever hear that before? Now I've got to recalibrate. Your Newton device needs to be calibrated. So let me tap the X's. Uh-oh.
Ghost of John Sculley up there.
Yeah. This was kind of, I tell you what. In fact, there's a video of me doing this show in 1994 or 95, holding up a Newton, saying, imagine if you could just put a phone in this and full-time internet connectivity, you'd have something amazing. I wonder if Steve was inspired by that. Anyway, hey, I appreciate the call. It's fun to see. We'll try to boot this thing up and see if I can make it to tell me happy eclipse day. That'd be pretty funny. Thanks, Bob. All right, have a good one. Take care. What a great story. Ta-da! Activating packages on the store. Newton. Well, it didn't get any eclipse stuff, but maybe I just have to set the date back a little bit. Wow, I can't believe this works. In fact, people are listening, probably going, "What Newton? What is that?" Well, kids, in the old days, this was the mid '90s. Steve Jobs had been fired at Apple, and John Sculley, the former marketing executive from Pepsi, was in, and somehow somebody convinced him, "Well, we should do a portable device, pen-based portable device that understands handwriting." That you could write on, and now there weren't any color screens. This is not a color screen. And in fact, I don't even think it's a backlit screen. It's kind of hard to read unless you're in, works well in daylight, bright light. But it has a calendar, has notepad. I mean, in some ways, this could easily have been the inspiration. Oh, it just rebooted itself. It's not happy. When you threw away stuff, it would crumple, like threw away a note, it would crumple it up and make a little crumpling sound and throw it in a trash can. This was the inspiration for a lot of stuff. The Mac was out. Mac was already around. But this, I think in many ways, the iPhone is the direct descendant of the Newton. It's kind of fun to see. I've got one I think this is the 93 original Newton message pad. And then somewhat later, this somewhat bigger device, the Message Pad 2000. This must have been 94, 95. But apparently, it knew about the eclipse. Well, that's funny. 8888 Ask Leo. I love Easter eggs. And if you had any, you share them with me. Or you got any questions, we'll talk tech. And as I said earlier, we are going to continue the show after the show goes off your radio. Continue to take calls. So we'll do that for another half hour, 45 minutes. Afterwards. So keep that number to hand. If you're on the line, I would promise I will get to each and every one of you. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More tech guys still to come. I have to play more of this song to get to the punchline. Because it's Bonnie Tyler, and she's having what? A little total eclipse of the heart. Get it? I'm resetting my Newton here to see if we get a little eclipse. I've set the date to August 11th, 1999. And let's see if we have a total eclipse of the Newton. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. I'm going to continue to answer calls as we talk for the next hour or so. So keep those calls coming in. Chris is on the line. He's next from Palmdale, California. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Well, real quick, my question was, what's your opinion on the new Max Q design on NVIDIA-powered laptops?
The new NVIDIA design on the 1080, or what are you talking about?
The Max Q 1080.
The Max Q. All right. Yeah. Well, I have a regular 1080. I think it's a Ti, and I quite like it. I'm not a hardcore gamer, so you know, this is for people who want to spend significant amounts of money on a video card, because I think more for bragging rights. Right? This new GPU, the Max Q, it's mobile, which is cool. That means you could put it in a laptop.
It's supposed to be for a thin and light laptop.
Right. It's the new Pascal platform, which is a good platform. I mean, I'm very impressed by the desktop GTX 1080. So it's for thin and light, which means, you know, they've got less power. They have to change the power profile. Benchmarks I'm looking at say it's a little slower, like 10 to 15% slower than the regular laptop GTX 1080. And, of course, the laptop versions of these parts are slower than the desktop version of these parts. I think that, though, this is impressive. I mean, that they're able to put in a laptop what is essentially a high-end gaming GPU is pretty impressive. Now, I don't have one of them, and I probably won't get one. The idea of the Max-Q is to get you some real power, but at a lower wattage, right? So they're not going to drain the battery too fast, and they also want to reduce heat. It's interesting what NVIDIA has done with their cards. They've got a Ti and Sli that lets you run two of them. The 1080 is it's their platform. It's their big platform. So are you thinking about buying a laptop with the Max-Q in it?
Yeah, because from what I've read, NVIDIA is saying that if you want this design in our laptops, essentially you have to, one, it has to be really thin, and also it has to be fairly light and quiet.
Yeah, but understand, you're giving up, in order to do that, you're giving up a little bit of performance. I mean, come on, this is a laptop. What game are you playing?
I play basically everything. Yeah. I've been playing a lot of shooters recently. I play whatever's around whenever I want to play.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine there's a game you won't be able to play at high resolution and, you know, high frame rates.
Yeah. I also do a little bit of video editing and photo editing, too.
Yeah, and of course, that's a little more tricky because not all photo editing programs or video editing programs are GPU-bound. A lot of times it's the processor, not the GPU, that's doing the work. It really depends on the program and what you're doing in the program. For instance, if you're using Photoshop, some of the Photoshop filters, notably Gaussian blur, will use the GPU, but some won't. So, boy, that's a lot of money. How much is that card? It's like if you were going to buy it standalone, it's going to be a significant amount of money. I don't know who's making laptops with the 1080 Max-Q, but that's a lot of money. On the other hand, you know how gamers are. They'll spend money for anything. And I think half the time, okay, just between you and me. Come on, Chris. Half the time it's just for bragging rights, right? You could say, yeah, you know what's in here? It's in here. That's the Max-Q NVIDIA GTX 1080. Yeah, it's pretty good, huh? But the problem is, for $1,000, how many times you get to say that before, oh, you only have the 1080. Well, I have the 1090. I got the 1100. I think it's a rat race. I wouldn't get too sucked up in it. But yes, if you can afford it, nice. Bert, Porter Ranch, California. Hello, Bert. Porter Beach, California. Porter Ranch, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
There you go. Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great, Bert. How are you?
Okay, good to talk to you again. Last time we talked about Melmac.
Oh, yes.
Okay, it was a long time ago.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah. Two devices, my Motorola Max,
yep,
and my iPad. I got a notification on my Motorola phone to update my contact list, to update my security. And then on the iPad, it said that my password was changed, but everything seems to be working just fine.
Did you change your password?
No, I did not.
Yikes. That's a little worrisome. Okay. So, periodically, a lot of places will say, including your bank and more, will say, hey, just checking, have you changed your email address? This is the one we have on record. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried so much about that. I do worry when you see notifications from companies like Google or Apple that, oh, you changed your password. Now, your password's still working, right?
I can get into everything.
They must mean your iCloud password. So here's a test. Go to iCloud.com on a computer and see if you can log in with your username and password. If that's okay, still working, then your password wasn't changed, and maybe that was just a spurious message. Maybe not, so maybe change your password anyway, you know? Just to be on the safe side. It doesn't hurt. Yeah. It's interesting. The recommendations have changed. Remember, a lot of businesses will say every 3 months or so, it's time to change your password. And that was because 20 years ago at NIST, they put out a recommendation that you do that. And the funny, because the guy who wrote that recently was quoted in the Wall Street Journal. He's 72 now, saying, yeah, I didn't really know what I was doing. And I just kind of made stuff up about passwords and best practices. And the one that's really been bugging people for a long time is this thing of just kind of routinely change your password. The reason that's not a great idea is your employees and even you will start using passwords that are easy to remember, or you'll add a number, you'll increment a number every 3 months, you'll add another number. And it doesn't improve safety. The real recommendation, yeah, and NIST has changed its recommendation, the real recommendation is change your password if you have reason to suspect it may have been compromised. Guess what?
Okay.
You now have a reason to suspect it. I would change
passwords.
Yeah, I would change your password. I would, and in fact, this might be a good time to get LastPass or 1Password, a good right. password vault.
Yeah, I recommend LastPass yeah. quite a bit.
This would be a good time to do it. If you get a warning like that and your password's not changed, that makes me nervous. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great eclipse and a great geek week. Take care. Yeah, that's an odd notification. I'm not so worried about the email thing because companies do that routinely. But for when Apple says your password's been changed.
No, it wasn't Apple.
Oh, it wasn't Apple. Who was it? I'm still on with you. Who was it?
No, it was Google. It was Google.
Oh, it's Google. Yeah, Google does the same thing. Well, if it's Google, same thing. I would have some concern. So you don't log into iCloud, obviously. Log into Gmail from a computer and see if it's changed. The other thing you can do is Google, if you go to google.com/, I think it's My Activity, will show you the logins. And you can see if somebody logged into an account of yours that wasn't you.
Okay, My Activity.
Let me make sure that address. You can Google My Act, Google on Google, Google My Activity. Google My Activity, if that's not ACTIVITY. Let me just see if that's, google.com/My Activity. It will show you all the logins, this is actually a great site, and it's very useful for security. You can also go to your Gmail, and in the lower right of Gmail, it'll show you the 5 most recent logins. And just make sure those are you. Nevertheless, okay. If Google says your password has recently changed and you didn't change it, I would say that's the kind of indicator that maybe you should change it.
Okay. All right. Can I ask you real quick something else? My
sure.
wife, actually, a quick
yeah.
question.
Sure.
Carol, go.
Oh.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. So I have my Google address book, and I have people in groups, and I'll put like 10 or 12 people in a group.
Yeah.
And one of them I had 12.
Yeah.
And the next time I went in, two of them were tossed out of the group.
Hey, knock it off.
Yeah, and that happens like often. I mean, I found those two people that were supposed to be in there. I put them back in the group, and the next time I went in, there were two people missing from the group. I don't know why that happened.
I don't either. The only time you look at your Google contacts is on the web, or do you use the address book on your iPhone or something like that?
No, only on my PC in my office.
Okay. Because sometimes, you know, if you're using it on multiple devices, maybe accidentally you clicked a star or a button and you removed somebody. But, you know, it sounds like a bug in Google's contact list. That's not normal. I don't think it's necessarily indicative of anything more serious, however.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have to write
it
on
depends how you're doing the groups. Now, if you're doing the groups, see, Google kind of messed this up with Google Plus. They started making these circles, and then they stopped doing it. But there, if you were using circles, people can say, "I don't want to be in that circle." I wonder if that's maybe what's going on.
No, I'm not using it. And these people have. I lead a group. So there are 12 people in this group, and when I want to send an email to the whole group, I just go in
right.
and type in the group, and they all come up. But when I go in and I go to pull up the group, there's 10 people instead of 12.
Is it always the same people?
No, not necessarily.
Boy, I don't know. That, I don't know.
Do you remember the Twilight Zone?
Submitted for your approval. A contact list that changed without your intervention. I have no idea what's going on there.
Okay.
That's not normal. I haven't seen that happen to me, but I don't pay that much attention to my groups, and maybe it is happening, but I just didn't notice it.
My answer to this is paper and pencil.
I have found, look at this, Gmail help forum. This is from 7 years ago. Some of my contacts are being removed from every group they're in.
There you go.
I've read a lot of forums and found other people reporting contacts missing from their... Let's see. I have the same problem. Can't find a fix. But this is 7 years ago having the same problem. This problem is reportedly due to the contacts you tag in Picasa photos. So this is out of date because there is no Picasa photos anymore. But I think that the message is because you use Google everywhere that perhaps that's what I was thinking is maybe something's happening somewhere else you use your contacts. This is very strange. Is your contact list synced with another device, with a phone or something else?
I can pull it up. My contacts are on my phone.
Yeah, so that's another interface to it. Even though you're not doing anything, it does sync. The other thing to pay attention to is where they get moved. Do they get moved out of all groups or into a particular group?
No, they just get. I mean, I have like 500 people in my address book, and they go back. You know, they're still in my address book. But when you go into
this was an old bug in Picasa. But then, wait a minute, this is Gmail messing with your contacts. I found Gmail is pulling names from the. Well, this is so there. I think Google has a long-standing bug, and that's what this is. Would be my guess. Okay. I mean, this goes back 7 years to 2010, but I wouldn't be surprised if this bug is cropping up in other of their apps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Leo?
So wait a minute. So paper and pencil, write them all down. So
just in case. Check every once in a while.
Otherwise, chisel and rock.
Chisel and rock.
Yeah. Real quick, about how long should an iPad 3 last?
Until Apple stops updating it with the operating system. You will notice apps starting to seem slow on it. As newer apps are developed and the developer assumes that you have a more modern iPad, you may find some apps struggle a little bit. I have an old iPad Mini.
Locking up from time to time.
That's probably not it. You know, that's just, you know, bugs. But at some point, for instance, when we go to iOS 11, they're going to deprecate all 32-bit apps, so a number of your apps will stop working or be deleted automatically. But that's not a problem either, as long as you can get updated. The real issue is going to be, at some point, Apple's going to say, no more iOS for you. And then you can still use it, but apps will start saying, but I need iOS 15. And you'll say, well, I can't get it. In other words, you'll know. It'll be obsolete before. It's not going to wear out.
Yeah. About how...
They've already stopped updating the iPad 3. Well, that's good. That means you're not going to get iOS 11.
Right. I don't even think you can get iOS 10.
Okay.
Okay. On the iPad 3.
Yeah, because it's 5 years old. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. So that just means nothing. It still works. But eventually you're going to see apps say, hey, I can't work on... I can't work in this environment.
Because I use that, like, now 90% of the time I use my iPad.
Yeah, so you're stuck at 935.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not a problem until apps start saying so. You don't notice it being slow or anything, right?
Sometimes it gets slow, but a lot of times it'll just lock up and I have to hard boot it.
Yeah, that may be showing its age as well.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would get, you know, this is Apple's problem is people continue to use old iPads because they work fine.
Yeah.
Nobody's buying new ones.
Well, I might be forced into it.
You might, and that's their hope. Hey, once every 7 years, come on.
Yeah, what do you recommend on the new iPad?
Oh, I love the new 10.5-inch iPad Pro is definitely the iPad to get.
iPad Pro?
Yeah.
Okay.
And get the 10.5-inch. And that will last you another 5 years before it starts getting slow. And
you know. Okay, because I don't want anything too bad because the size of the 3 is just great.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is the iPad Pro is about the same size as the 3, but they've shrunk the frame. So you get more screen, which is really nice.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great day. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.